so the exam, midterm exam, will be on Monday in class here. I'll bring paper and everything. It's a closed book, closed notes, so all you need to bring are pencils and erasers. Any questions about anything from last time or about anything? I wanted to sort of tie up some things that are easy today and easy to talk about, and it's something that we get for free with the stuff we've demonstrated about the Dirichlet problem. Also, I give me a chance to talk about my own research. It's an interesting fact in the disk that when you solve the Dirichlet problem and your boundary data function is a polynomial, I can show that the solution is a polynomial. So let's do the start out doing this on the disk of radius 1 about 0. So I like to use complex notation. That's the set of complex numbers such that mod z is less than 1. And I'll use C1 of 0 to be the circle. So that'd be the z such that mod z equals 1. And the circle, it has a special property that there's a thing called a Schwartz function for it. The Schwartz function for C1, it's S of z equals 1 over z. That is an analytic function. It's complex differentiable. And let's see, if I take the notice that 1 over z equals z conjugate. So if I'm on the unit circle, then I can write that if I write z is e to the I theta, then 1 over z is equal to e to the minus I theta. And remember, e to the minus I theta is equal to the conjugate. So the Schwartz function is something on the boundary that has that property. A Schwartz function satisfies S of z equals, so I have an analytic function on the left. Notice that the analytic function can blow up on the inside. That's called the pole at the origin. But it has the property that S of z equals z bar on the curve. That's the key to why this stuff I'm going to talk about today works. So here's the observation that makes it all clear. Let's suppose I have a polynomial of x and y. So this is a real polynomial. P of xy equals summation over, let's take a summation of a finite sum, Cij, x to the ith power, y to the jth power. That's a real polynomial of two variables. And the degree of that polynomial is the biggest possible I plus j, where the coefficients aren't zero. So the degree of P equal the maximum I plus j such that Cij is not equal to zero.
I have kind of an unrelated question. Well, it's related, but is that like the same as a polynomial ring where you put
polynomials belong to the ring of polynomials.
Right, but with the coefficients being of polynomials?
Oh yeah, you could say that this a two-dimensional polynomial is a polynomial in Y where the coefficients are polynomials in X. And if you're going to have fun in algebra, there's lots of theorems about the connections between those things. But for us, it's just a finite sum of terms like that. And the degree is the biggest possible I plus j. And here's the observation of why this has to do with the Dirichlet problem. I can write x is a half z plus z bar, Or I'm writing z is x plus iy. So I guess I should say let's let z be x plus iy. Then x is 1 half x plus x bar. This is kind of like how I got the sine and cosine things in terms of the complex exponential. And y, if I do the same routine, is 1 over 2i times z minus z bar. And so if I put these back into my polynomial where the x and the y's are, I get a formula. I get that my real polynomial can be written as a complex polynomial in z and z bar. It'll be a new sum with new coefficients, so I'll call them a, n, m, z to the n, z bar to the m. So I got a real polynomial, but I'm expressing it in terms of the complex numbers z and z bar. So this is, I call this a polynomial in z and z bar. And now if you think about this, I can see, if this is my boundary data, I can see a solution to the Dirichlet problem just by looking at this thing. And so here's the trick. Let's suppose that n is bigger than m. Then z to the n times z bar to the m would be equal to, let's see, I'll have z to the n minus m n minus m, and then I'll pile up all the, I'll have z to the m times z bar to the m. And remember, z times z bar is equal to 1 on the boundary, because that's the unit disk. Z, z bar. Remember, that's equal to the modulus of z squared equals 1 on the circle of radius 1. So this right here would be z, z bar to the nth power equals 1 on the circle of radius 1. And so, because that's equal to 1, I see that that piece of the polynomial is, that's a whole analytic polynomial on the circle of radius 1. Okay, so now the other cases are just the same. Let's see, if n is less than m, then I would do the same routine, but this time I'd concentrate on the bar part. I'd pull out the bar part and have z bar to the m. And let's see, what would I have? N is less than m. So I'd have z bar to the m minus n, and then what would be left would be z bar to the n times z to the n. And this is 1 on the circle. So this would be equal to z bar to the m minus n. That's harmonic. The real and imaginary parts of z bar to the n, that would be the conjugate of z to the m minus n. And so the real and imaginary parts of that would be harmonic. And so the last case to consider is if n equals m, then of course we would just have a constant. Zn times z bar to the n is just 1 on the unit circle. So this is on C10, and this is on C10. So I do this game. I start out with my polynomial and play this game, and then I can write a new polynomial that has the same boundary values, but it can written like this. So the aha is I have my p of xy. I turn it into a polynomial in z and z bar. So that's a little p, this is a capital P. And then I play this game on the unit circle and see that this is equal to a sum of a n times z to the n's plus b n times z bar to the n's and maybe plus a constant. So I'll put the constant over here, plus a constant. This is going to be on the unit circle. This is a harmonic polynomial, because this part, the z to the n parts, remember we had r to the n cosine n theta and r to the n sine n theta being the harmonic functions that we made solve the Dirichlet problem with? That's harmonic. So I find a harmonic solution to the Dirichlet problem. I started out with this polynomial. I found a different polynomial that agrees with it on the boundary, but extends harmonically inside. So the neat thing is this is harmonic. And solves the Dirichlet problem with the polynomial data.
Is that summing over n and m?
There would only be five. Oh yeah, this should be it. Yeah, I should sum over n and m. I don't know why. This should be an M right here. I could split those into two different parts. This is an M, this would be a complex differentiable polynomial, and I could put the bar outside and have the conjugate of one. So it's actually a polynomial plus the conjugate of a polynomial. Those kind of things are harmonic. The real and imaginary parts are harmonic. So what we see in a very elementary algebra way is that the disk has the property that given boundary data, I can find, given polynomial boundary data, I can find a polynomial solution to the Dirichlet problem. And remember, the solution to the Dirichlet problem is unique, so that is the solution. So here's a property. A property of the unit disk. I should mention that this is a unique solution. That was the maximum principle let us see that the solution to the Dirichlet problem is unique. The solution to the Dirichlet problem with polynomial data, boundary data, is polynomial. So the solution to the Dirichlet problem with polynomial data, boundary data, phi, is a polynomial. Might be a different polynomial, but it's a polynomial. That's a cool property. And so you might ask yourself, is the disk the only region in the plane that has that property? And the answer is almost yes. I'll show you in a second that there's one other region I can cook up that has this property. And I won't have to do any work at all to show you that. It's kind of a mind-blowing thing. But before I do that, I want to show you that what this little trick of writing out a solution to the solution, the Dirichlet problem for polynomials actually gives you a method for solving the Dirichlet problem. And I'll call it an application of Fayer's theorem. So this is going to be an application of Fayer's theorem. I never saw this in a book before, but it seems like a wonderful thing. Um, Remember what Fayer's theorem says. Let's suppose I have a phi. It's going to be, think of it as boundary data. Suppose phi is 2 pi periodic. And continuous. Then Fayer's theorem, I like to... Fayer's theorem says that I can find a trig polynomial says, let's get a small number like epsilon equals 1 over n, where n is a big number. Given epsilon equals 1 over n, there is a trig polynomial. Let's write it like this. Pn, which would be a sum of cn e to the in theta. From minus n to n. I don't need the n, maybe. It's a finite sum. There's a trig polynomial so that phi minus p is less than my epsilon, 1 over n. And if I'm thinking in terms of the polynomials on the boundary, here's what I'm going to do. So let's think for a second. If I write z is e to the I theta on the unit circle, and I can also write it as x plus I y, then z bar is equal to e to the minus I theta, and that's equal to x minus I y. And z to the n is e to the I n theta. This is on the unit circle, and z bar to the n would be e to the minus I n theta. So these formulas hold on the unit circle. So these are on the unit circle. And inside, if I put an r here, I'd have an r to the n. So it means that it's very easy to extend this thing as a harmonic function inside. All I have to do is stick the R's in there. So the aha is, the summation of Cn, let's see, right. So I can see the harmonic extension of P. It's just written there. I just replaced those e to the I n thetas with a c to x with a z to the n, and I stick the e to the minus I n thetas with a z bar to the n. I see the harmonic extension of Pn. It would be a sum of cn z to the n when n is positive, and it would be a sum of the c minus n z bar to the n when n is negative. That means that that would also be n positive, because I put the minus. So this would... This thing is a harmonic function, and it agrees with my polynomial on the unit circle. And it's really close to phi. So the great idea is to approximate by a limit. So I'd get these polynomials. get solutions to the Dirichlet problem. By Thayer's theorem, that are close. They're not solutions yet. I get these Pn, which are harmonic. I'm going to call them p sub little n. They're harmonic, and phi minus p sub little n is less than 1 over n on the unit circle. These are going to converge uniformly to phi. That's what this means, to have this estimate on the unit circle. But remember the maximum principle? I've got to think a little bit about the maximum principle. So Pn converge to phi uniformly on the unit circle. Hence, they are uniformly Cauchy on the unit circle. Uniformly Cauchy on the circle. And remember, that's just an estimate. And that estimate, because of the maximum principle, that estimate would hold on the inside as well. So the uniformly Cauchy estimate, they look like this. Pn minus Pm less than something. Would extend to hold on the inside because of the maximum principle. The max occurs on the boundary.
But
yeah.
Is uniformly Cauchy something different than Cauchy?
Yes. A sequence is Cauchy, and being Cauchy on a whole interval is uniformly Cauchy with the same constant. That was in one of the Stein exercises that you did about power series.
Well, isn't it? If a sequence is Cauchy on intervals, that implies uniform on an interval.
You use the word uniform when you get the same estimate for all the x in the interval.
Right.
So that's why the word uniform appears there. So I get, if I just have a sequence of numbers being uniformly Cauchy, you get is an estimate like this. And if you have it for all x in an interval, it's called uniformly Cauchy. Yeah. But because of the maximum principle, that uniformly Cauchy estimate extends to the inside. And so that means that the Pn's actually converge uniformly on the whole closed disk. And I claim that they converge to, say, to, let's call it to U. The uniform limit of continuous functions is continuous. So it's a continuous function I claim that U solves the Dirichlet problem for phi. Claim U solves the Dirichlet problem for phi. For the boundary data phi. So knowing I can solve it for polynomials meant it was very easy to approximate and solve it for general things just by taking limits of continuous functions. The Dirichlet problem. Okay, we know U is continuous. We know it has the right boundaries. U is continuous, that's a check. We know that. U has phi for boundary values. U of e to the I theta is equal to phi. B Because the phi, remember the pn's converge to phi on the boundary. So that's a check. So it has the right... Last thing I need to check is that it's harmonic. And it's incredible how easy that is, because those pn's being harmonic satisfy the averaging property. So I claim U satisfies the averaging property. And is therefore harmonic. That's something we showed last week. And that's the end of it. We're done. And it's funny how easy it is to check the averaging property. Because it's a uniform limit of things that satisfies the averaging property, that's all there is to it. So we'd write U of Z naught is equal to the limit, That would be equal to the limit of the Pn of Z naughts as n goes to infinity. And the Pn's are being harmonic satisfy the averaging property. So this would be the limit of integral of Pn C naught plus R e to the it dt, where that R is some small radius, 0 to 2 pi. And because of uniform convergence, this would converge to the integral of the limit. And that would be the integral from 0 to 2 pi of u of z naught plus r e to the it. So when you have uniform convergence, I think you learned in Math 341 or someplace, or 440, uniform convergence means you can interchange limits with integrals without sweating about it. So this is because of the uniform convergence. And there's the averaging property. So check. You've got the averaging property. And remember, functions that satisfy the averaging property and are continuous have to be harmonic. So I solved the Dirichlet problem sort of without writing the formula. It's kind of a neat thing. It's an existence proof. So that's a neat application of Fayer's theorem. And you won't find that in many books. They always solve it using the Poisson kernel, because it's a formula and everybody loves it. But Fayer's theorem gives you a very simple proof that the solution to the Dirichlet problem exists. And now I wanted to show you the example. So here's a question that is related to my own research. What domains in the plane satisfy the property that polynomial Dirichlet data gives you a polynomial solution? So what domains in the plane have the polynomial goes to a polynomial solution for the Dirichlet problem? And I'm going to show you an example besides the disk of something that does. Namely, it's an ellipse has this property. And I can show you this without doing any analysis. It's kind of a mind-blowing fact. An ellipse, let's see, an ellipse would look like x squared over a squared plus y squared over b squared equals 1. And the inside of the ellipse would be, I'm going to write R of xy, this is a second degree polynomial, is x squared over a squared plus, no, it's a minus, isn't it? No, it's a plus. Minus 1. That's a second degree polynomial. And the ellipse is the region such that that is less than 0. So the ellipse E is the set of xy such that r of xy is less than 0. This thing is called a defining function for the ellipse, because the boundary is where it's 0, and it's the region itself is where it's less than 0. So you know what they look like. This is E. Has semi-axis B and A. And now here's the incredible easy thing. You've heard of Paul Erdős? He used to say that certain theorems with easy proofs belong in the book of nice easy proofs of nice theorems. And I think this would be one of those famous theorems that belongs in the book. It depends on a thing called the Fisher map, which is elementary. The Fisher map. I take a polynomial, and I take the Laplacian of r times it. R is my defining function for the ellipse. And so this p is a polynomial. When I multiply it by the r, which is a second degree polynomial, I get a new polynomial, and then I take the Laplacian of it. That is another polynomial. So that's the Fisher map, is a mapping from polynomials to polynomials. And notice that it doesn't increase the degree. So when I multiply by r, that would increase the degree of the polynomial by 2. But when I take the Laplacian, that would reduce it by 2. So the interesting thing is, this thing is second order linear. It reduces the degree of a polynomial by 2. Reduces degree by 2. And r is second degree. And r times p increases the degree by 2. And so this thing, we see that the Fisher map, let's call this Fisher map F. So the Fisher map of a polynomial is equal to Laplacian r times the polynomial. The Fisher map, I claim, maps nth degree polynomials into nth degree polynomials. So let's let P sub n equal nth degree polynomials. An easy fact that just depends on these two things right here is that the Fisher map maps nth degree polynomials into nth degree polynomials. And this thing is a finite dimensional vector space. I don't care what the degree is, all I care is that it's finite dimensional vector space. And that F thing, since it's a linear differential operator and multiplication is linear, that's a linear transformation. F is a linear transformation. I claim that it's a one-to-one transformation. And the mind-blowing thing is, knowing that it's one-to-one is going to imply that it's onto. That's the novelty of this thing. So next I claim F, the Fisher map, is 1:1. And here's why. If I remember when you're doing linear algebra, being 1:1 means that all you have to worry about is mapping 0 to 0. I mean, the only thing that maps to 0 should be 0. Let's suppose the Fisher map applied to RP is equal to 0. To see that it's 1:1, I have to show you that RP, that's not RP, the Fisher map applied to P is equal to 0. I need to show that P has to be 0, the 0 polynomial. Okay, the Fisher map being 0 means that the Laplacian of R times P is equal to 0. Well, if the Laplacian of something is 0, it means it's harmonic. So this means that RP would be harmonic. But remember, my R is 0 on the boundary. So I've got a harmonic function and that it's 0 on the boundary. But RP vanishes on the boundary. So I've got a harmonic function that vanishes on the boundary. The maximum principle implies it's 0. Let's see what the maximum principle would be, imply that RP is less than 0. I repeat it for minus RP, and I get that RP minus RP is less than 0. So repeat. Well, actually, I did this before, so I'm just going to say the maximum principle implies that RP is identically equal to 0. I did this argument before that the maximum principle would give you RP is less than or equal to 0. And then you repeat it for minus that and get minus RP is less than or equal to 0. So it's got to be equal to 0. But remember the R here, so this is even on the whole ellipse on E. But R was only 0 on the boundary, so this P has to vanish inside. But R is less than 0 inside P, inside E. So that means that the polynomial is identically 0 on E. It's the 0 polynomial. And that shows that the map is 1:1. And now a linear algebra fact. If you have a finite dimensional vector space, let's say a V is a finite dimensional vector space, and you got a map that takes V to itself, that's 1:1, then the conclusion is that that's got to be onto. It's because there's a basis. And being 1:1 means the basis vectors. It gets sent to the whole full dimensional, finite dimensional thing. Then F is onto. And that's all I need to show that the ellipse has this property. So here's the solving the Dirichlet problem in the ellipse. Suppose I've got a polynomial. Suppose P is a polynomial. Let's take the Laplacian of P. is a polynomial too. Since the Fisher map would be onto the Fisher map is onto the space of polynomials of this degree, so there would be a Q with Laplacian of R times Q equals P. Laplacian of P. And now I claim that P minus RQ solves the Dirichlet problem. P minus R times Q solves. I should say there's a polynomial Q. P minus RQ solves the Dirichlet problem with data P. Why is that? Because when I take the Laplacian, I get 0. Laplacian P minus RQ, that's Laplacian P minus, and it was Laplacian RQ is equal to the Laplacian of P, so that's a big fat 0. And R is 0 on the boundary, so this thing is equal to P on the boundary. So it's harmonic, and this thing equals P on the boundary because R is equal to 0 on the boundary. So I've got a harmonic function that's equal to P on the boundary. It solves the Dirichlet problem, and that's a polynomial. So I found you a polynomial solution to the Dirichlet problem by linear algebra. That's kind of freaky. P minus RQ is a poly. So the ellipse has the same problem as the disk. And if you could look, and you'll never find another domain that has this property. And so there's a famous conjecture of Hovinson and Shapiro that if something satisfies that property of domain, so the Hovinson-Shapiro conjecture, and the mind-blowing thing is this conjecture is still open. If a domain has the Dirichlet poly-to-poly property, a domain such that the polynomial Dirichlet data implies this polynomial solution, so property must be a disk or an ellipse. And there are no others. The mind-blowing thing is that's still open. Even though, this is where my own research comes in. I worked with these guys, same guys, Hovinson and Shapiro, in the case that we studied the rational problem. If you have rational data and certain domains have the property that if you have rational data, then the solution to the Dirichlet problem is rational. So here's the but. This was, I did this with four people, Avenfeld, Hovinson, and Shapiro. Um, if a domain satisfies the property that rational data gives you rational solutions to the Dirichlet problem, then it's got to be a disk. I can show you that the disk has that property, and the hard thing was to show it's the only thing that has that property. That required some complex analysis and some Riemann surface theory, which is great stuff. So if a domain has the property that rational boundary data leads to rational solutions to the Dirichlet problem, rational solutions to the Dirichlet problem, then the disk is the only domain that has that property. And it must be a disk. So something about that ellipse example makes this a very screwy problem. This was doable. It only took 15 pages. But the polynomial one is still open, and there's people writing gobs and gobs of papers about it. They have special cases that they can show. If they add some other assumptions, they can show it has to be an ellipse or a disk. But the general case is still open, and it's one of those problems that drives you crazy because it looks like it ought to be easy. I don't have. I'd like to show you that on the disk, the rational data gives rise to the rational solutions. It's very elementary, and it's just algebra. If I have time next week, maybe I'll show you that. Okay, so I'll see you Monday, and I'll bring all the paper and everything you need. You just need pencils and erasers. You too, see ya.